Welcome to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast, where we go inside what makes a coach a coach. The Guardians of the Game podcast is a production of the National Association of Basketball Coaches and Learfield IMG College, brought to you by Wilson Sporting Goods. And now, here's your host, Dave Odom.
Welcome back to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. Today's guest is the head coach of the BYU Cougars, Mark Pope. Mark, welcome to the broadcast. We're glad to have you, and your team's off to a really good start at BYU, and we want to talk about that, but we also want to talk about Mark Pope growing up. And I was looking at your resume here in the last day or so, and, you know, you grew up at Newport High School in Bellevue, Washington. I know that's just across the sound from the University of Washington. And tell me about growing up in that area.
Well, it was, you know, I was really lucky to be able to live there in a great time in the kind of history of Seattle. So I was born in Nebraska and then spent my childhood in New York and then went to high school in Seattle. And it's a great town and was able to play under a great high school coach, Rich Belcher, who, you know, is a Hall of Fame coach in that state and had a wonderful childhood.
Tell me about the basketball in that particular neck of the woods. I mean, you've had some really outstanding players to come out of there. I know Quinn Snyder came out of that area. Tell us about the importance of basketball in that sound area.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, the University of Washington had a pretty good history with Marv Harshman and his great runs. But basketball, especially prep basketball in Washington, was pretty quiet on the national scene. We didn't have a lot of traction until Quinn Snyder. And Quinn, I think, was 5 years ahead of me. And he came out and, you know, obviously had an unbelievable career at Great Mercer Island High School under Ed Pepple. And ended up going to Duke and going to at least one Final Four there. And then there was a whole crew of us, you know, 4 or 5 years behind him where, you know, where Seattle basketball can't kind of jump back on the scene. And then it's been humming ever since. And so it was a great time to be a high school basketball player is our prep programs were growing.
Lynn Nance was the head coach at the University of Washington back in those days. And he recruited you. And I'm sure you got recruited by some other schools as well, but you decided to stay home.
Yeah, I love Coach Nance. You know, Coach Nance has been a huge player in my growth as a person and certainly as a player. He's got a unique background. He was an FBI agent on the narcotics unit, actually. But you know, he played at the University of Washington. Was a great player and then went on to work in the FBI and came back to coaching. Actually had a great run at St. Mary's, had a top 20 team at St. Mary's, and then took the job at Washington. And you know, we couldn't get it done there. We couldn't win enough. So my sophomore year, coach got fired. It was actually the hardest experience of my basketball life, just not being able to win for him. But, you know, we still keep in close touch, and I love him. He was a huge influence on my life.
Well, you did do the best you could do. I noticed in reading your bio that you were freshman of the year in 1992-93, 8.1 rebounds a game, and it looked like things were going pretty good except for the fact that he got fired. And I don't know, was that the kind of the springboard to you transferring to Kentucky?
Yeah, it was really hard, you know, and when Coach got fired, it was just hard for me to stay at that point. I just felt like, you know, he was the reason that I went there and we had become so close, and it always is when your coach gets fired or leaves, it's always a tough situation. So when he left, it just didn't feel right to stay. So I transferred to Kentucky, and it was a real blessing also.
All right, and you get to the University of Kentucky. Rick Pitino is at kind of the summit of his career there at Kentucky. You actually end up going on and winning the national championship what was it, 1996, I believe, you won a 90, the championship. And I hate to say this, it just kind of burns me a little bit, but I think you beat my team in Minnesota, didn't you? That year we had lost my point guard a little bit earlier, and I really to this day think we would have won the game if we'd have had. But you won the national championship. You went on to play in New Jersey and just had a wonderful experience there with Coach Pitino.
Yeah, well, listen, you know, I love Coach. Coach was generous enough to come out here last year and spend a couple of days with us, and you know, it was so unbelievable to play for him. Now, I say that I love him now. I didn't really spend one single day at Kentucky loving him. He was just so tough on us. I mean, he was so relentlessly tough on us. But as we went through our careers, you know, you started to see that the pain that we had to go through every single day was actually changing us and turning us into something. He's such a great coach. And I remember, Coach, I really, really remember that game versus you guys to go to the Elite Eight or to go to the Final Four, right?
Right.
And so Rusty LaRue is one of my dear, dear friends. We got to coach together for a year at Wake Forest, and we've known each other for a long time. And he was a great player for you, was a two guard for you. And when your point guard went down, you know, we pressed every single possession of every single game, 94 feet. I'll never forget Rusty getting inbounds pass and trying to back guys down from 94 feet. He was going to back his way all the way down the floor. It was so fantastic.
Well, he did what he could do. I do think we had as good a point guard as it was in the country in Tony Rutland.
No doubt.
And
And come on, you had one of the greatest players in the history of basketball in this Tim Duncan.
Yeah.
I mean, you had an unbelievable crew. It was such a great team.
Yeah, it was an epic game. And of course, I think the game before we had just beaten Louisville with Denny Crum, and that I think he felt like that was a bit of an upset because we didn't have our guard, but we beat him. And I don't remember who you played in that other game, but we ended up.
We actually played Utah. We actually played Rick Majerus' Utah team, which was a really good team.
How about that?
So that was a terrific regional. It was a really good group.
Unbelievable. Okay, let's kind of inch forward here a little bit. Now, when did you – let's see, you get drafted by the Indiana Pacers in the second round. And I don't know, you had – you bopped around to two or three different teams, the Pacers, back to the La Crosse Bobcats. You went over in Turkey and played a year or two at one of the better teams over there. You had the Bucks, the Knicks, the Nuggets. Now, when did, in your mind, the idea that you might want to coach kind of spawn itself, seed itself?
That's a great question. I never as a player did I think I would coach. I never imagined coaching when I was a player. In fact, when I finished playing, I went straight to medical school and was excited about going down that path. And probably a year into my first year in medical school, I was like, man, I don't know. I miss this game a lot. I'm not sure. And we stayed with it until the beginning of my fourth year of medical school. And had been talking, you know, had been thinking about it. It's like, ah, man, I don't know. I don't know if this is what I want to do. And so we started thinking about coaching kind of during that time. And I had some, Mark Fox, one of my dear, dear friends, was a graduate assistant when I was a freshman at University of Washington. And, he obviously went on to, he's in the middle of a great career right now. We became good friends at Washington. We had talked ever since. And, you know, right before I was starting my fourth year of medical school, Foxy got the Georgia job, and he called me, and we had talked about coaching for a long time. He's like, hey man, if you're coming, this is the time, you have to come. And so, my wife and I, Leanne, we struggled with the decision for about 3 weeks. And then finally walked into, you know, I was at Columbia Medical School. It's one of the top medical schools in the world. I walked into Dean Mellman at the time, and I told her, I was like, I'm going to leave. I'm actually going to coach at the University of Georgia. And she was so disgusted with me. She was like, have you lost your mind? And but jumped in the car, drove to Georgia to work an elite camp that Coach had going on. It was the first time. And it was such a torturous decision. But the first moment I walked on the court for Coach, I just was like, I was born to do this. This is what I want to do with the rest of my life. And I've loved it every day ever since.
You're telling me and everybody else that's listening, you go through almost 4 years of medical school, you walk out on it, you go into a gymnasium down in Athens, Georgia, and it's almost like a revelation. It's something I've meant to do. I've been meant to do. I was born to do this, and I'm free. Is there any thought at all about going back to that at any time, the medical?
No, there's not, Coach. Hey, I never told you I was smart. I just know what I love. You know, I just have been really blessed. Like, this game is just like all of us, right? We've been so blessed by this game, and now as a coach, the chance I have to like work and work with and shepherd these young men as they try and weave their way through this incredibly pressure-filled, complicated process of chasing their dreams, right, and try to become what they want to become. It's just completely intoxicating to me, and it's unbelievably challenging. Like, I feel like it's stretched me in every conceivable way, and clearly I have so much to learn, but man, I love the process.
Well, you said you had great respect and a great contact with Mark Fox. You go to Georgia in 2009, but you only stay 1 year. And you go to Wake Forest with Jeff Pozdelic, who was the coach at that time. And why the change from Georgia to Wake Forest?
Well, so I learned something actually in my professional career as a player that I could only trick people for about 12 to 18 months. I could only trick them for that long, and then coaches realized this dude is actually a terrible player. So in my NBA career, literally that was the case. Like, I could make it through the first year and they'd be like, nah, I think this guy actually might be able to do something. 6 months, halfway through the second season, they're like, we are 100% sure this guy is not a player. So I'd have to bounce to another team. And so I got 1 year with Coach Fox. I was there as the assistant. Actually, my formal title was the basketball operations coordinator. I was not an assistant coach. I was a staff guy. And so I was the basketball operations coordinator. I was, you know, doing laundry late at night, couldn't be on the court, working our team out. And it was actually such a gift to do all the grunt work of basketball coaching and none of the stuff that I really dreamed about doing, right? And learn the game from the ground up. And Coach Fox told me that. He's like, Hamlin, bring you here. And you're going to learn all the little details that everybody has to do, all the things that you have to do. Someday you're going to ask people in your program to do for you. You got to learn how to do them better than anybody else. So he put me in the grinder. And then a year later, I got an opportunity to be an assistant coach at Wake Forest. And so it was an unbelievable opportunity and a great jump for me. And, of course, I played for Coach Pozdelic with the Denver Nuggets, and so we had a great relationship. So I was really excited to move on. And Foxy was excited to get me out of there. He was done with me.
Georgia's in the SEC. Wake Forest is in the ACC. Other than the fact that at Georgia you were not able to be on the floor or help recruit, and at Wake Forest both of those were realities. What were the differences in the two leagues, if any?
Oh, it's a great question. I think, you know, obviously I played in the SEC, so I knew that league really, really well. That's a great question, Coach. I don't know if this is appropriate. Maybe it's not right. I feel like the SEC is... Everything I'm going to say, I'm going to get myself in trouble. I'll tell you this. There are two great leagues. I mean, just extraordinary leagues. When I was playing in the SEC, we had five and part of the season, six teams ranked in the top 25. That's when I was playing there. When I was coaching there for the 1 year with Foxy, the league wasn't that deep. The ACC had become the deeper league. But there's great basketball in both leagues, no doubt, and great coaches in both leagues.
There really are. And, okay, in 2011, you had contact with BYU.
Yep.
BYU, before we get into you going there as an assistant, I was reading your bio. You're a member of the Mormon Church, Church of Latter-day Saints. Tell us about that. Now, are you a lifetime member of that church, or are you a convert? How important is that where you are at this moment in your life?
Well, I am a lifetime member, and I think for most of us, I don't know if I can speak for most of most people in the world, but I think there were times when my faith probably wasn't at the forefront of my life, and certainly for the last 20 or 25 years, it's been probably the keystone of everything that I am. Right, it's just my foundational faith, and so it's really important to me and my family, and is certainly a guiding light for us.
Okay, 2011, you get the phone call from Dave Rose, who preceded you as the head coach there, and is well respected throughout all the basketball circles collegiately here in the United States. He asked you to come and be an assistant for him, and you were there, 4 years? Is that right?
Yeah, I was there for 4 years with Coach, and watching Coach work from a distance, I would always look out at his teams and be like, how is he winning with those guys? Like, how is that even conceivable? And he's certainly one of the great coaches in college basketball and had an epic run here at BYU. Did things that, by all accounts, should not be able to be done. And so I was excited to, we've been in the East for a long time. I was excited to kind of come West and have a chance to recruit more in the West and kind of branch out in the West. And certainly really, really excited to learn from Coach Rose, who, like I said, is, I think, one of the great coaches and great human beings in the business. And also was really excited to see if there could be some tangible merger between this basketball life that had been so dominant a force in everything that I did for a long time, and also my faith. And so I was really excited to kind of experience that unique opportunity. Of course, my time working for him was so awesome. I learned so much, and it was a great 4 years.
Tell me some of the logistical things that you have to work through when you're recruiting for BYU. You don't have to go into too much detail, but I mean, I think that our listeners, some of them are not aware. You may get a kid for 2 years and then he leaves and goes on, a Mormon sabbatical, and you may get him back, you may not. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So the missions, members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Church, especially young men, are seriously, I think most young men seriously consider serving a mission for the church, which is a 2-year mission. They can go anywhere in the world. They're assigned to go. They pay their own way. They completely immerse themselves in serving that community. So there's, for basketball players, they go and there's no hoops for 2 years. There's no weightlifting or working out, or they have a half an hour a day just to kind of keep themselves fit. But it's a, it's kind of a 6 a.m. to 10:30 p.m. fully immersed calling and going to serve God and serve people. And so it's an unbelievable experience for these guys to go do that. But it does make rosters sometimes really complicated, not just because you lose guys. You know, sometimes you recruit. For example, I got a commitment from a young man several months ago who I actually won't see on my campus for 4 years. And so, you know, that part can be complicated. And you know, I know Coach Rose, when I was here with him, had a young man who just after his sophomore season decided that he was going to leave for 2 years. So there's, it's just a really interesting dynamic. And then when these young men go, kind of immerse their life in something that's probably way more important than basketball, you never know exactly what you're getting when they come back. Sometimes kids come back with a different perspective on life, where they just feel like, hey, you know, maybe basketball is not the most important thing to me in my life right now, and then like to do something else. And sometimes guys come back and feel like, you know, it's their calling in life to come pursue this game and serve through this game. And so it's an extraordinary opportunity that a lot of these young men take, and I think it is life-changing, and I think it's a beautiful thing. But in some cases, it can make coaching and putting together a roster and maintaining a roster complicated.
Okay, so you had four really good years under Coach Rose there at BYU, and you had an opportunity to be a head coach for the first time at Utah Valley, a school, you know, obviously right in Utah, as is Provo, Utah. And you had a chance to go over there, and I'm sure there was a great Mormon influence over there as well. 4 years at Utah Valley. What was that like?
It was so awesome. I mean, Coach, I'm guessing that every coach has I'm guessing a lot of coaches have a similar experience, but I will cherish those 4 years at Utah Valley till the day I die, because it was just it's your first chance to be a head coach and run a program, and you have such incredibly limited resources, but such huge dreams, and you're scraping by just to make things work. And we had unbelievable success there. And it was just my favorite so far, my favorite season. This is my fifth year season. My favorite season was our first year when I had, you know, five scholarship guys and five walk-ons and you know, we stunk, right? But we found ways to win games, and guys played so hard, and, you know, we're piecing everything together. It was such a beautiful experience.
You as we talked about, you coached under Dave Rose for a number of years there. What were some of the more important lessons that you learned as an assistant under him?
Well, you know, I always talk about Coach Pitino and how the thing that I learned from him, and I learned so much from him, but just this idea of just being a relentless, just every moment of every day, you keep coming at it, right? And it doesn't matter when things go wrong, because if things go wrong, that means it's not the end of the story. You just got to keep pushing through and pushing through and pushing through. And with that background, a really, really, you know, I think something I probably learned from Coach Rose, among the many things I learned from him, was just this idea of patience, right? Which those two things might seem like they have a tough time coexisting, but I think when you stir it right, the combination is beautiful. But Coach was incredibly patient. He was incredibly trusting in his staff. You know, he made everybody on the staff and in the program feel like they were so invested that we were going to be successful or fail based on their work. And so that brings in an unbelievable amount of investment from your program. I think Coach obviously operated with such tremendous integrity in everything that he did. And, you know, one of the things that he did so well that I think is hard to match is, you know, Coach Rose was universally beloved by everybody. And in an environment, in an arena that is so hyper-competitive, to be able to have the career that he did and still be kind of universally well-respected and loved is extraordinary. So, I mean, I could go on for hours about things Coach taught.
Well, you know, you had two really opposites in Coach Pitino and Coach Rose, but they both had a way of getting the job done. So it just tells you that there's more than one way to do things as you move along. So that's really good. Listen, the West Coast Conference, the one that BYU is in, it could be the most underrated college basketball league in the country. Yeah, you know, you got the likes of Gonzaga and St. Mary's, and Santa Clara's coming along now. And I mean, you know, BYU obviously is right in the mix for the championship every year. Talk to us a little bit about West Coast basketball, the West Coast Conference basketball as it is today, and what you have to do to try to get your team competing with Gonzaga, St. Mary's, and others.
Well, listen, you know what's interesting is everybody in the country knows Gonzaga, and everybody knows St. Mary's, and everybody knows BYU, right? They know they're great, but not so many people really know the West Coast Conference, which is interesting. You know, I think the last 5 or 6 years, but, you know, our conference has been rated between the 7th, 8th, 9th best conference in America, which I think is the one conference that's a top-rated conference that people don't really identify with. I think that the most interesting thing in this conference is think about the coaches. It's the most daunting thing for me. So I went to, you know, I took the job, and 3 weeks later I was at the West Coast Conference head coaches meeting. And so you're sitting there with Mark Few and Randy Bennett and Lorenzo Romar and Herb Sendek. And, you know, you just go down the line of the great coaches in this league. It is a coaches league. It's a basketball league, and it is a tough, tough conference. And so it's a great place to be. I feel really fortunate to have an opportunity to be in this league, to compete against and learn from these coaches. It's a special place, special league.
Mark, as we kind of wind down our time together here today, you know, I don't know about you, but, you know, when I was coaching basketball, I used to have, like, clinics on campus, or I'd have basketball camps for kids on campus. And, you know, just about every time we had something like that, I'd have a young coach that would come up to me and say, "Coach, I just need 5 minutes of your time." I'd say, "What do you need?" He'd say, "Well, you know, I really want to be a college coach one day, and I'd like to eventually be a head coach like you someday. And I was just wondering maybe if you could give me some advice." And, you know, to everybody that would ask me that, there might be a different answer there because their situations might be different. But and so I tried to, you know, deal with each one individually. You're younger in the head coaching ranks, but you've done it a big, really different. I mean, you know, medical school and then, you know, several stops in the pros. And, you know, what would you tell a young coach who was aspiring to be in the college ranks and then later a head coach at the college level?
Well, I don't know if I have any great advice, but maybe I got a quick story I could tell. You know, I think I would tell them that probably the advice that I've heard over and over: if there's anything else you can do, you should probably go do it. And if there's nothing else in your life that you can do that's going to bring you this much joy, then that means you're probably going to be really successful at coaching. You know, I think that coaching, you have got to fully immerse yourself in it. It kind of has to be the main force in your life for you to be successful. I really do believe that. And, you know, I, one of my favorite stories is about Frank Vogel, who's currently the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. When I was at the University of Kentucky, Frank Vogel was playing as a player. Frank Vogel had just finished, I think, his second year playing at a small NAIA or junior college somewhere in New Jersey. And he just was so passionate about basketball. There was nothing else that could feed his soul the same way. And he finally came to the realization that he was not good enough. He was never going to be able to be a pro. And so the only way he could be in basketball was to coach.
And so he Coach Pitino had coached the Knicks during his childhood, and he was a huge fan of Coach Pitino's, and Coach Pitino was now coaching college at Kentucky. So Frank got this idea in his mind that he was going to go and be a manager at Kentucky and learn how to coach and go be a coach. So he started calling Bill Keitley, who was our equipment manager at University of Kentucky. And Mr. Keitley kindly explained to him that, you know, people were on a waiting list to be a manager at Kentucky since they were like 6 years old, and there was no spot. And so Frank just kind of refused to take no for an answer. He jumped in his car, didn't really have a dime to his name, drove to Lexington, parked outside Memorial Coliseum, and went in to see Bill Keitley. This is after a month of getting no's. And Mr. Keitley lost his mind. If you know Mr. Keitley, at the time he was really, really old, and he was pretty grumpy, but the most beautiful human being in the world. Kicked him out of his office, sent a note to Coach Pitino. He's got this crazy kid who's driven all the way from New Jersey. Frank slept in his car outside Memorial Coliseum for 3 days. He wakes up the third morning to some guy pounding on his window at 6 o'clock in the morning. It's Coach Pitino. And Frank tells the story. Coach Pitino is banging on his window and throwing out expletive after expletive that he can't park there and he's got to get out of here and he better leave Mr. Keitley alone. And you can't do this at the University of Kentucky. And as soon as he finishes his tirade, he says, listen, kid, be in my office in 5 minutes. And so Frank, who's been sleeping in his car now for two nights and 2 days, is the third morning. He kind of pulls himself together, just woke up to his hero, kind of cussing him out through his car window. And he walks in the office and Coach Pitino makes him a manager, starts a JV team for him to play on. He starts sneaking in with the great Jim O'Brien, who was an assistant then. He asked Jim if he's like, can I just come in your office? Jim would watch film till late in the wee hours in the morning. He's like, can I just come in and watch you? I promise I won't say a word. Just watch you cut up film and see how you do it. So they develop a relationship. 4 years later, Frank is an assistant video coordinator with the Boston Celtics. And 10 years later, he's the head coach of the Indiana Pacers, coaching the Eastern Conference Finals. And that story doesn't always happen, but if you want to do this job, you're competing against guys where this job is their whole life. And so if you want to do it, then you just kind of have to throw your whole life in there and be willing to kind of go with the ups and downs of it. And if you do, if that's how you're cut, it'll be the greatest ride you've ever had.
I can just add a little bit to that. That's such a great story, but lately, college basketball has just gone through as a gift from ESPN. Jimmy Valvano coaches versus Cancer Week, and of course the great speech that Jimmy gives every year. Nobody gets tired of hearing that. But the key part of that is don't give up, don't ever give up. And I think that can be applied to young coaches. Because you're not going to get the first job, likely you're not going to get the first job that you think you're going to get. Or if the job you get, it may not turn out like you want it to get. You may get it, but it'd be different. So I think Jimmy Valvano, and that's much more serious, coaches versus cancer, much more serious than one person's life as a coach. But I think it says so much about don't give up. Don't ever give up. So I hate to give up now, but our time's gone. And so I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. And to you, Mark Pope, you are a champion because you believe in what you're doing and you believe in your team. You believe in their players. You're trying to help them. And that makes you a champion. You're going to have many great years and great days and great games at BYU as the leader there. So I want to thank you for taking their time to visit with not only me, but a countless number of listeners who care about college basketball and in the country today. So good luck to your team. We'll be following you from afar. And to those that are listening, I want to say, if you want to learn more about the NABC, you need only visit the NABC.com.